We're going to continue on talking about the life, the ministry, the things that Jesus is doing, and we see that in John chapter 6 from that perspective. Last week, if you were here, we just talked about how you matter to God, and we looked at the beginning of John chapter 6 where a group of people get away, Jesus and his team get away because they want to have a small retreat to get away for a season of time just to pray and just to be refreshed. And then all of a sudden the crowds come searching for where Jesus is. So a day of retreat ends up being a crazy day of ministry. And so they spend the day ministering and doing great things. It's right at Passover weekend. So everyone there is anticipating the arrival of the Messiah. They're thinking about how God worked through Moses and the Exodus and everything. So all their minds are just on their Independence Day of being free from Rome, of what God could do in their land and in their place. And so their minds are just all involved in what God could do. And then Jesus does an amazing miracle. He takes a small child's lunch and he multiplies it at least 15,000 times for the crowd. So they have a feast. So then the crowd, who's already thinking about Moses because it's Passover time and their minds are on how God worked through another Moses, and then they're thinking about, man, like they got free from Egyptian rule, we want to be free from the Roman tyranny that is controlling us. So their minds are on that. And then here Jesus performs this amazing miracle, and they're thinking, here's our new Moses. Here's our new Messiah. Here's our new King David. Here's the one that's going to rescue us from Roman rule. And they just throw a massive campaign to make Jesus king. They're like, make him the new ruler. Let's go. Let's get the banners out. Let's get the yard signs ready. Let's make him the new Messiah. And this is going to be great. We are going to take Jesus and we're going to march from here all the way up into Jerusalem. And we're just going to say, Romans, boom, get out of town. And so that's their anticipation. The crowds are like, make Jesus king. And here it's getting dark, it's late at night, and then Jesus gets his team together while all this murmuring is going on in the crowd, and he pulls his guys together, and he's just like, get on the boat and get out of here. So he has them get on the boat, and they have to leave. Thank you, boatmaster. He's like, get on the boat, go over there. I mean, without warning, it's just like, Peter, go. John, go. Andrew, go. You're out of here. Get on the boat, leave. Why? Go. I'll meet up with you later. They get in the boat, row off. Jesus walks through the crowd. Thank you for joining me today. You can head home now. Thank you for joining me today. Head home now. Thank you for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed your meal. Go home now. Sends them home. Turns off the lights. Calls it a day. Sends them home. He goes up and just spends time praying. Loves to pray. Loves to be with his Father. Spends that time recharging, being refreshed. The rest of the guys, they're on the boat. Doing what you do when you're on a boat, going from one side to the other, rowing and rowing and rowing and rowing. And in John chapter 6, we pick up with what's going on. John chapter 6, verse 16 goes like this. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. So they're now in the boat rowing. Get from one side to the other. Now, can you imagine what it was like to be in this boat? We don't have a lot of details, so I'm going to use a little bit of preacher license to just kind of fill in potential details of what it could be like. Because you have to remember, this is now nighttime. Early in the morning, they headed up onto the mountainside to just have a retreat to pray. They have now spent the entire day ministering, and not to a small crowd, to a massive crowd. Then, not only that, they get through the whole day, and then as it's getting towards the late afternoon or into the evening, Jesus, having compassion on the people because he loves people, because people matter to him, is like, hey, team, feed them. Now they, as students of the master, are trying to figure out, how can I accomplish this test that he's given me? So now they are going through the crowd trying to figure out, how are we going to do this? What are we going to do? One of the guys is sitting over there doing the math of what it's going to cost to feed them. Another guy's, you know, walking around. Anybody got food? Anybody got a big cooler? They're out there doing all that. So that's what they had spent the day doing. Then they feed the crowd. And my imagination has it being like when you go to a football, baseball game or something, and you're at the massive stadium, and it's a break where everybody comes out to get food, and you have a few people in a concession stand and a crowd that just keeps going and going and going and going and going and going, and everybody's up there. So they're feeding everybody. Then you have the whole political rally that starts forming under the surface. Then they're told, get out of here. So they're in this boat rowing, exhausted. They're physically exhausted because they've spent the day working. Long day. Now they're even more exhausted because they're ending the day when they want to just be like asleep, rowing and rowing and rowing and rowing. And if you've ever rowed somewhere before, it gets really boring and monotonous, especially when we find out in a few details coming up, they're now in a storm. So they have wind blowing against them. They're fighting waves. The boat's kind of bouncing around and they're doing it. So it's even more work. They're physically exhausted from a day of ministry. Probably a little bit spiritually exhausted because they are just tired. Ministry is exhausting. They're still grieving the loss of John the Baptist, who was executed. So they're dealing with that. So they have that weight that's still in the back of their minds of, wow, that's hard. We lost a dear mentor of ours before we met Jesus, and that weight is on them. Then on top of that, you now have a little bit of relational exhaustion. They're confined in a boat together after a whole day of work. So they're getting a little tired, a little bit crabby. And I'm sure you have some of the guys that are just like, full on, row, 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 because we're getting from here to here, a five-mile journey roughly from one side to the other. They're like, we're going to get there. So you probably have those guys that are like, row, row, and they're coming up with annoying songs, you know, probably as some kind of thing to do. And then you have somebody else up there that's just like, I'm tired. I hate rowing. I hate boats. I hate lakes. I don't even know if I like you. And, you know, so they're just like, nap time, you know, and then somebody's like ready to hit them with an oar. I'm sure you have that. I'm sure you have one side of the boat that's not rowing with the same power as the other side. So it's kind of going like this. About 10 years ago, we went on a trip to Hawaii and there was a small island we were on, and we were going to go out. I don't remember how far it was off the shore, but Nolan and I ended up with the short straw and we're together. Here it is. I'm his dad. And at the time he was, what, I don't remember how old he was, 8. And so we get in a kayak that we're using to go across the water, and I sit in it and he sits in it, and his front end's like, the front end's like that because I slightly weigh more than him. And so he's up in the air and he can barely touch the water with his oar. And we get out of the little area that we're in at the bay where we get in the boat, and we get out there where the waves and everything are hitting, and the whole front of the boat kept swinging around towards the shore. We watched as my wife, as our friends, they're getting to the little island we're going to do the sightseeing on, and me, we're heading all the way back to America, apparently, to the mainland, because the boat kept swinging over. A wave would hit, it would go over. I'm kind of losing my salvation in that moment, ready to just bury my son, because it's like, dude, row already. He's like, okay, Dad, you know, and it's just like, whoosh. And it's just, so imagine what they're like, because they're facing that same stress, that same frustration, that same annoyance in the boat. So they have that. Then add on top of that, as they're rowing, as they're journeying, on one hand, they're having this thought, best day ever. Here it is. We've been following this guy that we're pretty sure was going to be the Messiah. But he's like not really doing the things we thought he would do. Because we thought, man, when he comes into power, he's just going to have this big rally. He's going to pull against a bunch of people. We're going to have this massive event. We're going to stand up. Israel's going to be free. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. I mean, they're waiting for that. And the whole time they're like, it's just not happening. And then it happens. They're like, see it happen. And they're like, whoa, 15,000 people. That is a big support group. And they're finally like, yes, it is happening now. And then they're like, hey, we're the top 12. We are set. Because David had his mighty men. Now we're going to be Jesus's mighty men. And all those stories we read about growing up, and they talked about David and all those groups, that's nothing. And then he sends us away. Here it is. He does a miracle. The crowds are excited. It's awesome. And he sends us. Why did he send us away? What did we do wrong? Did we really botch the test that much? Is he replacing us? What is happening? Mind you, they're tired. So what happens usually when we're tired? We exaggerate everything. So imagine what it's like for them. Imagine rowing. Rowing, rowing. Wind pushing against them, waves building up. And then they're like, what is going on? What is happening? Verse 18. The sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and only coming near the boat, and they were frightened. Here it is. They're rowing. A storm is building. They're in a storm. They're in a difficult situation. It's not by their making that they're in their situation. They're in this storm because they obeyed God. They're in a difficult situation because of their obedience. Sometimes the things we face are because we're obeying God. And a lot of times we want to avoid the storms. We want to go around the storms. We want to say, oh, God must be against me because I'm in the storm. And they're in the storm, they're in the difficulty because of their obedience. That's hard. Because sometimes we face difficult things because we obeyed, because we made a stand, because we shared Jesus, because we lived out our faith, because we were obedient to God, we face persecution, we face a little bit of hardship, we face things that are hard because of the obedience. But sometimes in those storms, we learn something significant that we can't learn when we don't go through the storm. So they're in the storm, they're rowing, and as they row, off in the distance, they see somebody walking towards the boat. Not really walking towards the boat, because one of the other accountants, I believe it's Mark, says it looked like Jesus was just going to walk right past the boat. They're tired. They're frustrated. They just want to take a nap. They don't know what's going on. They see Jesus walking. There's a bunch of guys on here that spent their lives growing up rowing boats in the night in storms. So it's not like you got a bunch of scaredy cats in the boat. You have manly men, big, strong, muscular men rowing the boat, not normally scared of a little bit of a storm. Somebody walking on the water, though, is a whole new experience for them. So they're like, it looks like Jesus, but he's walking on water. They're like, hey, if I step over this boat, I'm going down. I'm under the boat. Here's Jesus. Walking towards the boat. One of the details we miss, Jesus waited to go find them. They're in the storm. He's praying. I don't know how he saw them. I don't know if they had a small light on the boat. I don't know if the Spirit of God just kind of revealed it to him and reminded him of it. I mean, it's dark, there's a storm, so there's not going to be much light. So Jesus is aware they're out in the storm, and he keeps praying. He allows them to go through the storm a little bit longer because there's things they needed to learn. There's things they needed to experience. There's things that would only come by them facing the storm. And so then he comes walking along. They're still, the boat's rocking. The boat is being pushed by the wind. The boat is moving around. They see him walking along with not a care or concern in the world. I can picture him just kind of whistling as he walks. You know, I can't whistle very well, but he's just kind of whistling, singing a little, you know, tune, just kind of walking, you know, this is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. He's doing something. He walks, starts to just walk past the boat like, hey, you guys going to come with me? What? You going to catch up? What? Isn't it crazy how there could be a situation to us? Feels like it's the worst situation ever. Feels like it's the heaviest weight ever on our shoulders. Feels like we'll never get out of it. And when Jesus shows up, it's not a big deal to him at all. To us, it's like, oh, this is horrible. What am I ever going to do? To Jesus, like, what's the big deal? To Jesus, it's like, it's just a little wind, just a little waves. It's just a little physics that I'm defying right now. But why are you stressed? Why are you worried? It's not a big deal. So he comes walking up, about walks right past them. Then Peter. He's like, I'll put this whole ghost thing to rest. Because if it's a ghost, he's clearly not going to talk to us, I guess is what he's thinking. And then we see the account in Matthew. Matthew's account, chapter 14, starting in verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from land, beaten by waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, that'd be sometime between 3 and 6 a.m., he came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Isn't it crazy how when Jesus shows up, it just calms us quickly? And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand, took hold of him, and saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." I mean, think about it. Peter is just like, Jesus, if it's you, call me out upon the water. Let me get out of this boat and come to you. And on one hand, that's like a crazy, big, bold thing to pray. On the other hand, it's a natural thing to pray of a disciple to the master, because a disciple is intended to duplicate, to repeat, to carry out what the master is teaching them. They imitate the master, because a master is reproducing himself into his students. So if Peter's up here in the boat, watching Jesus walk, seeing what Jesus is doing, it's a natural response for him then to say, if you're doing it, Jesus, I want to do it too, because you're my master and I want to be like you. I want to do what you're doing. It's the whole heart of what Jesus told them in John chapter 14, verse 12, where Jesus said this, truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes in me will do the works that I do, and greater works than these will you do, because I am going to the Father. Then he continues, whatever you ask in my name, this I will do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If you ask me anything in my name, I will do it. The very nature, the very heart of a disciple is, I want to imitate, I want to do the things that my master is doing. So for Peter, it's like, hey, Jesus is over here. I want to be where Jesus is. I can picture heaven. I can picture heaven. I can picture the Father hanging out with the angels as this is happening. And I can picture the Father just going, everybody quiet. Everybody hush. Everybody pay attention to what's happening right there. Because there's somebody that is finally getting it. There is finally somebody that is making the connection. There is finally somebody that is developing a real, sincere faith and trust in me. Well, everybody, pay attention. Watch this. This is going to be amazing. I can just picture that. And then here's Jesus. Hey, get out of the boat. Here's my fear sometimes, that as we get older, my fear is that we will only have stories of what we saw God do yesterday. We're like, man, God did some great things in 1974. God did some amazing things in 1982. God did some wonderful things in 1993. God did something awesome in 2004. And we have these great stories about what God did then, but not a great story about what God is doing today. Peter's up there in the boat, and he's just like, I don't want to just hear stories about how we saw what Moses did or heard about what Moses did thousands of years ago, because that was awesome when we hear the story about how the Egyptian army is chasing after the Israelites and they're on to the Red Sea, and then Moses walks out with his staff and plants it in the water, and then overnight the winds blow and cause there to be dry land for him to run across, and then the army comes and they hit that and then it floods back. That's awesome. That's a great story about what God did then, but I want to have what God has today. I want to have a story for today. That's my fear. Great story then. I want a great story today. Because here's the thing. All of us can have a great story today, because the scripture didn't say, yesterday was the day the Lord had made. It said, this is the day that the Lord has made. All of us in this room are still breathing. All of us are still here. That means God still has something for us today. And so then it comes the matter, will I live for Jesus with everything in me today, or am I content with what God did yesterday? So here he is, just like, hey, Jesus, if it's you, I am coming out. And he came out. And I don't know why the rest of the boat didn't flood out there to be with him. I don't know. I don't know. Why didn't the rest of the team get out? Sometimes, you know, I used to think, you know, it's just like, well, they didn't have the same faith that Peter did. Maybe some of them are just like, oh, he is going down, and it's going to be awesome to watch. You know, in today's world, it's like, pull out the cell phone, hit video. We are winning America's Funniest Videos because this is going to be awesome. I don't know if they were thinking that. I don't know. I don't know why they didn't get out. I would venture to say some of it was they're just tired. And so they're not processing everything well. Because we never process things well when we're wiped out, when we're tired, when we're in the middle of the storm. So Peter gets out and he just starts walking toward Jesus. And it's awesome. He's doing something nobody's ever done before. And it's awesome. Until he's like, whoa, this is not possible. This is, whoa, look at that wave. Whoa, wait, whoa, whoa. I shouldn't be standing here. I shouldn't be doing this. And he just starts to sink. And then Jesus just let him go under and drown, and it's horrible. No, Jesus didn't do that. Jesus just walks to him, grabs him, pulls him up, and then they walk back together to the boat. They get into the boat. The storm stopped. And then the way John, I believe, wrote it, it's like they immediately get to the other side. Now, on one hand, it could have been a miracle where it was just like, all of a sudden that boat was like motor-powered. Most likely, it's they almost got all the way across the lake before Jesus even walked through them. It was like they almost endured the entire storm before the miracle happened. But the reality is, the miracle happened in the storm. The miracle didn't happen before the storm. The miracle didn't happen after the storm. The miracle happened right in the middle of the storm. So sometimes we're like, God, get me out of this storm, when really we should be praying, God, teach me what you want to teach me through this storm. And instead of being like, God, I don't think this storm is your will. What if it is? Because at the end of this, I mean, think about the miracles that they experienced. Jesus comes walking on the water. I mean, that displayed something totally unique. How do you explain that? That's not explainable. That is supernatural. It is not natural. You could even try to explain away what happened with Moses, because he's like, he walked out there, he planted his staff, and then all night a wind blew. So it dried it up. In this case, Jesus is just walking across the water in a storm, not getting thrown around, not sinking, not anything. He's just walking towards them. That's one miracle. Second miracle, Peter steps out of the boat, walks to him. Another miracle happens. Right in the middle of the storm, another miracle happens. Then Jesus and Peter walk back to the boat, step in the boat, the storm stops, they end up at their destination, the storm's over. I mean, three miracles happen, boom, boom, boom. And then their response is, wow, that was cool. Hey, did somebody blog about that? Hey, did somebody get that for Facebook status? No, they're like, they're sitting there and like, Jesus is more than a prophet. Jesus is more than a king. Jesus is more than a ruler. Jesus is more than an inspirational teacher. Jesus truly is the very Son of God. Jesus truly is God in the flesh walking amongst us. And so here in the midst of the end of a storm, in the midst of a very frustrating, difficult 24 hours, in the midst of their brokenness, in the midst of their hurt, in the midst of their exhaustion, and they're like, Jesus, you truly are the very Son of God, and I worship you with everything in me. Had Jesus let him go on with the crowd, they would have been like, Jesus, you're going to be a great political leader that frees us. And they would have missed identifying him as you truly are God in the flesh walking amongst us. So in the storm, they experienced way more than they would have had they not gone through it. And it's hard going through difficult situations. It's stressful. It's hard. It's hard having faith. It's hard trusting because our imagination's trying to fill in all the details we don't have. And it's hard. But it's when we walk through those storms, when we trust our God, it's when we learn the most. It's when we experience the most. It's when our faith develops the most that suddenly we're just like, you're more than just a great encourager. You are the Son of God. You are my Savior. You are my Lord. You are my best friend. You are my absolute everything. And then they have a great story to tell. Not about what God did thousands of years ago, but what God did today. But it's scary and it's hard because you don't know. So whatever storm you're going through, trust God to walk you through the storm. And have the attitude of, God, I want everything you have for me in this storm. Because the storm might be a big deal to me, but it's not a big deal to you. Because while I'm fretting, you're whistling. While I'm stressed out, you're singing a hymn. While I'm just wanting to panic, you're just like taking a leisurely walk through the grounds. And you're like, what's the big deal? My God's in control. So Jesus, I am going to trust you the whole way. Nine years ago, I was offered a position to work on staff at a church in Texas. And my wife and I flew down in January. We get down there and we do a formal interview with everybody and their dog. There were eight staff members at the church, so we had all these interviews, all these meetings. Then one staff member didn't even come to most of them. So then we have to have one more set of meetings with her to rehash absolutely everything that we did before. So it's hard. Then on top of that, where we were going was in El Paso, Texas, which is 85% Latin American. So we're going down there, and one of the staff members said, hey, it's really hard for just straight Caucasians to come here because they're considered outsiders. So it can be hard. And so then we're a little stressed. So then while we're there at the interview, we're like, okay, we have to like do a lot of things. Like we need to find out where's a good place to live, where good school districts are, and we have to do all that. And the whole time, because of this one staff member saying all these things, this gets us all nervous because we're like, here it is. We really like this team. We really like the opportunity. We're really falling in love with this place. We really feel that God leading us to be here. And then we're just like, and then this comes up, so we're stressed. We're like, what do we do? And then the craziest thing happens. We're in the desert. Their winter lasted 3 weeks, a year. That year, they had an unusual cold snap hit with snow. We were actually trapped in El Paso an extra 2 or 3 days. Then we're like, hey, we got this time. So we went to schools. And we're going to the schools because that staff member, she had had a hard time moving there with her son and everything, had a really difficult time transitioning to the schools. So we're nervous. What are the schools going to be like? We walk into the schools. We went to three different schools in three different neighborhoods we felt like we should move to. And three principals came out and talked to us. And all three principals were female Caucasian blondes. And here it is, we're stressed about how will our children that are going to stand out in the crowd, how will they adapt when everybody else has a darker skin, everybody else has black hair, brown hair, everybody else, how's our kids? And then we walk into the schools, it's like the three principals of the three schools we go to, we're like, and we talk to them, and we're like, oh, all our fears are put to rest. We have a peace about being there completely. The last day I met with the pastor, he's like, hey, I'll let you know in a couple weeks what's going on, what we're going to do and everything, and then nothing. Then it's we go back home, it's radio silence for 2.5 weeks or 2 weeks. And at that point, my stress is going up because now I'm on the boat stressed. I'm like, what do I do? How do I get through this situation? Because on one hand, I'm like, hey, I have this peace about where God wants us to be at this time. And on that, and then the other hand, he's like, hey, I'll give you a call. And then it's nothing. And then so it gets to be around Thursday of the week that I thought he was going to call, because he said, hey, I'll let you know within 2 weeks. So it gets on that Thursday, and I'm just like, my heart at this time is stressed. So I just told my wife, I have to go pray. So I got in my car and I drove down 64 and just kept driving and praying and driving and praying and driving and praying. Got almost to right before it 64 turned south towards Mount Vernon, that last exit before there. And as I'm driving down, the Lord spoke to me. He's like, he will call you tomorrow before 5 o'clock. It's all the Lord spoke to me. I knew nothing at that point, except I was confident that it was the Spirit of God speaking to me at that moment. So I pulled on the exit, turned around, and drove home celebrating. I didn't even know what the answer could be. He could very well call and just say no, but at least I would know. So I drove home the whole rest of the day. I'm at peace because I know it's the God spoke to me at that point. As it's getting close to 5, I'm getting a little bit nervous. Did I really hear from God? At 4:57, my cell phone rang. It's like, hey, we'd like you to come. I'm like, duh. Lord already told me. A couple weeks go by, and then he just calls me. He's like, I really need you here by this certain date. It was in March. And I was like, okay, I will do what I can to make it happen. So we start playing all this. We had a house to sell where we lived in O'Fallon. My oldest was still in school, so we didn't want to pull him out the last 2 months of school. We wanted him to kind of go through that. So we're doing all this planning, all this stuff. And he's like, no, I really need you here by this time. I'm like, okay, I will do what I can to make it work. Because I'm like, I don't know how we're going to afford two different places. There was an option that the pastor had helped me work out of where I would live and everything. So we set a time. We're like, okay, on Thursday morning, we're starting that nice 1,200-mile drive. I loaded up the back of my minivan of everything I thought I'd need before my family moved down there. So the very back of the minivan is like packed with a bunch of stuff that I ended up not needing. But, you know, who knows? I like to be prepared. I'm an overpacker. You take me on a trip, I'm the person that has 85 outfits per day because you just don't know. My wife, on the other hand, is just like, no, you need one outfit here. We can do this. We'll do laundry here. I mean, we went on a cruise, and my wife did laundry. But it's just like, she's a planner that way. Me, I'm just like, let's just take it all because I just don't know. So, I mean, the van's packed. We're just like, I'm doing all that. I'm taking everything I need. I make sure I have room because the boys and my wife were driving with me, and then they were going to fly home. So we get there. Thursday's the day to leave. We get it all planned out. On Tuesday night, he calls and said, hey, that plan I have for you where you're going to stay fell through. But I'd really still like you to be here. And I'm like, I really still want to be there. So Thursday morning, we left and drove 1,200 miles to a city 1,200 miles away in a different part of the country in a different culture. And I had no place to live when I got there. I knew where I was going to work. And I have nowhere to live. And my wife, the whole time while we're driving down there, she's making phone calls. We're trying to figure things out. We're like looking for places where we could rent a room. We're like looking for what a super cheap apartment would cost to rent. We're trying to figure all this stuff out while I'm driving down there. And then we get there, and so we can hit the ground running. We arrive there at lunchtime on Friday, and then the pastor's just like, hey, I'm starting you today. So you're now on the clock. I'm going to start paying you today. And we're like, yes. And so we start doing that. And so I had a couple meetings to do as we talked and visited. And he took us out to dinner and all that. So all day Saturday morning, we're running around trying to figure out where I have to live. Saturday night, we still have nothing. We go to church Sunday morning. We're sitting there all morning Sunday morning. We're like, I still don't have a plan. I can tell my wife's probably getting super stressed, super worried, super, I'm just leaving my husband here. And I, being very impulsive and thinking, God's going to take care of me. God's got us. God's shown himself multiple times already to this point, so I can trust him moving forward. If I have to live in my van or sleep on the floor in my office, I will do it because I know this is where we're supposed to be. So I'm determined. My wife's getting a little stressed. I'm sitting there thinking, I wonder how many free hotel points my dad still has so I can be living in the Hampton Inn because at his job he collected bonus points for every night he stayed. And I'm like, maybe I can work this out. I don't know. Maybe I'm just going to live homeless somewhere and experience that. I don't know what I'm going to do. And so we're doing that. We go through service on Sunday morning. I worship, I pray, I cry. We go to lunch with the pastor and his wife. We do that, and as we're going to lunch, we're driving behind them, and they drive around part of the church building as they're going out the back of the parking lot, and they stop and just sit there oddly at the edge of the parking lot for a few minutes, and then they take off. And I'm like, why are we just stopping here? You know? And then we drive up, and we get to the restaurant, and then unbeknownst to me, the pastor's wife just saw, because a missionary always parked his camper trailer right on the side of the building. It was a missionary into Mexico, which was a few miles away. And he always just left his camper there for any time he was at a meeting on the States, so he didn't have to go through the border cross point at certain times of the day. He would just hang out there. So they just pull over. They call him. They're like, hey, Leonardo, do you think it'd be okay if this Mark just stays in here for a few months till his family gets here? What do you think? And he tells them yes. So they just drive on. They're doing that while we're in the car behind them. We have no idea what's going on. We get to lunch, and then the pastor's wife's just like, hey, Mark, I have this idea for you. What do you think about living in that camper trailer behind the side of the building? You don't have to pay anything, no rent, no nothing. All the utilities are paid for because they're covered by the, hooked up to the church. So all you got to do, and basically they provided me a free place to live for 4 months. It's like, okay, I'll take that. 2 weeks before my family moves there, so I lived in that thing for 3.5 months, 2 weeks before, or a week before my family gets there, the missionary shows up. He's like, I have a problem. I was riding my motorcycle and my passport flew out of my back pocket. I can't get back over to Mexico to where my family is, so I'm going to move my family all over here. And so I really need you to move out of the RV. So I am now homeless again a week to 2 weeks before my family is moving down there. And so I load everything out of it. And then I'm like, okay, now I'm kind of confused. How do I have this conversation with the pastor again to tell him I'm now homeless again? I'm like, who do I call? Do I call one of the other staff members? And what do I do? Because at that point, I'm now in the middle of another storm again. I am now freaked out. I am now crushed. And so I move out. I have everything loaded up in my vehicle. I drive over to the other side of the mountain to a graduation party, and I'm there with one of the other pastors, and I'm telling him what's going on. And he's just like, hey, you know, if you need to, you can stay here at the house, you know, for the last week. And I wasn't really wanting to do that, but I was like, if I have to, we will, but I'll let you know, because something wasn't settled in my spirit. So then I'm just like in a bummed out, crushed mood at that point, because I'm like, God, you took care of me all this way, and now we're like 10 days away from them getting here? Really, now? Now I have to deal with this? Now? And then I drive back, and I'm just like, I'm just going to go back and just hang out at the RV a little bit longer, just for a few hours, just because it's my own space, because then tomorrow I got to go live with somebody, and now I'm going to have to follow their schedule because he's just got daughters at home. So every time he leaves, I'm going to have to leave. It's just going to be awkward. So I was like, I'm just going to go back there and just chill out for a few hours before I have to now face this. And so I go back and I sit down, and I'm just, as I'm driving up, Leonardo's coming up in his motorcycle, and he's just like, he was Italian. So he gets this real big Italian, just runs up to me, gives me this big hug. He's just like, I'm so happy to see you. And I'm like, I'm not really happy to see you, but because you now made me homeless. And he's just like, gives me this big hug, and he's just like, God is so good. He goes, I was driving on the interstate, and I saw my passport sitting on the side of the interstate on the shoulder. Look at this. Look at this. I'm like, cool. He's like, you can move back in. I'm like, yes. Stepping out in faith is scary. Stepping out in faith is hard. Being in a storm is not difficult, but often the miracles happen in the middle of the storm. We skip the storm. Oftentimes we'll skip the miracle. I want all that Jesus has for me. And I want you to have all Jesus has for you. I want you to have fresh stories to tell everybody. Not about what God did 10 years ago, not about what God did thousands of years ago, but what God is doing today. Because what God wants to do through you today is so much better than anything God's done before, because he promises to do even greater things through you than what he did.